You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Jamie Spence.
I'm in a very privileged position that I had a variety of choices, and it says a lot about the European Tour and the standards we have now in Europe, the quality of picks that I have and how far we've come over the years.
So the waiting is finally over as Captain McGinley completes his 12 to do battle at Gleneagles.
The nine players who are already in place will be joined by Stephen Gallagher, Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood.
So no look, Donald, we speak to Paul very shortly and find out why he made the picks he did. Former Tour player Jamie Spence gives us his thoughts on the final 12 and we hear from the three picks. Also on the show, we hear from Henny Otto, who won his third European Tour title in Italy at the weekend.
Golf's not perfect, is it? And especially after the injury, second week back, win, I'll take it any day.
So all the news and reaction to come from the weekend's Italian Open, as well as today's announcements at Wentworth. Plus, we also look ahead to the Amica European Masters with former winner Richie Ramsey. Jamie, thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai podcast, a very special Race to Dubai podcast, of course, because we're talking Ryder Cup. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, looking forward to this show.
Well, the waiting for the show and indeed the Ryder Cup Wild Card picks is over. Your thoughts on the announcement that Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood and Stephen Gallagher will be playing in the Ryder Cup team for the Europeans at Gleneagles?
I think Paul's done a terrific job here. I mean, he's really into the meat of this job now of being a captain. It's couldn't have been an easy couple of days for him pondering, and Stevie Gallagher certainly gave him something to think about. And I think he's made the right choice because Stevie's played so well all summer long. And Luke Donald, I think it probably was between Stephen and Luke. I think having Lee in that team room and having Poults the way he played, he won it for us last time, to have them in there is a must. So I would have thought the choice would have been between Donald and Gallagher. And the way Stevie played, yes, how could you leave him out? It reminded me, actually, of Eduardo Molinari up in Gleneagles when he won, and he really gave Colin Montgomery a problem. And again, Colin had to pick him. Same scenario, I thought.
We'll talk more about Stephen Gallagher in the Italian Open a little bit later on in the show, because it was, of course, the final counting event to Ryder Cup qualification. But I guess the golfing world is going to be surprised, Jamie, that Luke Donald misses out. Former world number one, lots of Ryder Cup experience. Why do you think Paul did not pick Luke?
Yeah, well, when you look at his Ryder Cup record as well, 10.5 points out of 14, it's incredible, really, isn't it? And if you'd have gone back to that great day Medina when he stuffed Bubba Watson first out as well, that's never easy. He's gone first out, Luke Donald. He's a great leader. You would have thought he wouldn't get into this side, but he's remodeled his game. He's struggled this summer. He's had a third place of the PGA and a second place of the Heritage a long time ago. He hasn't finished in the side of the top 25. Since April on the PGA Tour. So it's form. And Paul always said he was going to look at form. He's a big stats man, Mr. McGinley. Captain McGinley, I should say.
Yes, indeed. You talk about form, Jamie, but Ian Poulter's not really shown too much form in 2014, has he? Is his Ryder Cup record and what he brings to the Ryder Cup, we just can't leave him out?
You just can't leave him out, can you? I was privileged to be in that team room last year at Medina on that Saturday when he just carried the whole team that whole day. He came back in the locker room and it was just an incredible experience. Everyone was chanting one Ian Poulter. He'll never forget that. I certainly won't. Neither anybody else who's in that room. So Paul McGinley could not leave out Ian Poulter.
What about Lee Westwood? Again, people will look at Westwood's record and Donald's record over the course of this year, and Donald was higher up on a number of the lists heading in to the final event of Ryder Cup qualification. What are Lee's qualities?
Well, he's a leader. Having been in the last couple of team rooms and seen Lee, you know, when he speaks, everyone stops and listens. He was leading the USPGA, wasn't he, after the first round? He shot a great last round in the Bridgestone. So he has shown glimpses of form, Lee. He's totally rested. He is a guy who I want on my side. I really would. I walked around a few holes with him earlier this year, and he just nails it off the tee. You're going to have to hit the ball a long way round Gleneagles. Maybe the golf course, you know, with the conditions being wet, soft. We consider Westwood a very good driver of the ball. Maybe not Donald. Maybe that was in Paul McGinley's mind.
Well, let's confirm Europe's Ryder Cup team. Jamie?
Yeah, Rory McIlroy, of course, number one golfer in the world. Then the great Henrik Stenson, love watching him play. Sergio Garcia has been chasing Rory McIlroy all year long. Justin Rose. Martin Kaymer, US Open champion. Victor Dubuisson. And what are we going to get from Victor at the Ryder Cup? We'll find out. Great for him to get in the side. Thomas Bjorn, delighted for Thomas. Only going to be his third appearance, Thomas Bjorn. Jamie Donaldson, what a great win the other week there to seal his place for Jamie. Graham McDowell clung on there, just about hung in there for the last place. New dad, Graham McDowell. And then the last three picks, Stephen Gallagher, Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood.
So those are the 12 players that will represent Europe at this year's Ryder Cup. And I'm delighted to say that the European captain, Paul McGinley, joins us now. Paul, how relieved are you that that's all over? The last few weeks must have been tough.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's relieved. I mean, it's part and parcel of being Ryder Cup captain. You have to analyse it. You have to make cold, hard decisions. And that was all part of the job. I didn't want to duck it in any way. I wanted to deal with it head on and put everything on the table. And, you know, I like to think that I did that before we came to the decision of the three players.
When did you finally make your mind up?
Honestly, not until kind of tea time last night. You know, I had an idea, but I didn't really go down the road of saying it's definitely going to be A, B or C. I wanted to discuss it with the two vice captains that are in place. I wanted to get their opinion and make sure that we're moving very slowly but very assuredly in terms of making the right decision.
Talk us through your three picks, Paul.
Well, different dynamics. Obviously, Ian Poulter is Ian Poulter. We all know what he can bring in a Ryder Cup. Obviously, you know, his form hasn't been terrific over the summer period, but he has amassed a huge amount of Ryder Cup points due mainly to his finish at the end of last year in the Race to Dubai series. But he's a guy who's he's had a few injuries during the summer, but he's also a guy who never really showed a huge amount of form going into a Ryder Cup. And we all know how well he's played in Ryder Cups in the past. So I wasn't massively looking for a huge amount of form from him. All I wanted him was tiptoeing towards the Ryder Cup, and he was certainly doing that, if not reaching the heights that we would have liked in terms of top fives, top tens and wins. But then you move on to Lee, and you know, Lee was obviously a close call with Lucas of which one of those was going to be the decision, and obviously Francesco Minolneri was another guy that came into the equation, and Lee got it by the fact that he just stepped up to the plate in terms of having missed four cuts in a row, performed very well in Firestone and performed very well at USPGA when we really needed him, and he needed to show a little bit of form. He was able to raise an extra gear and go to a different level, and ultimately it was a decision that got him over the line by a short head. Stephen Gallagher, to me, wasn't over the line by a short head. He was quite a ways over the line, a couple of lengths over the line. He played extremely well when the gun was to his head last week, when the pressure was on. He absolutely turned up, he performed, and all credit to him. He deserves his place in the Ryder Cup team. I didn't have to push him over the team. He's earned it himself.
You said that all along, Paul, about the European Tour players, and it reminded me of Eduardo Molinari when he forced his way into the team back in 2010 and Justin Rose missed out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, as you know, the standard on the European Tour is an incredibly high standard. We know, we play it week in, week out. We know how good you have to play to have big finishes. Stevie's had more top tens than anybody on the European Tour this year. He's a bread and butter guy, plays the European Tour. Yes, he plays some events in the majors and all Latin America now, but he's homegrown. He's deserved a spot. And one of the reasons why I was keen to go from two picks to three was bearing in mind the rank and file European Tour members who are playing at a very high level on the European Tour, but not necessarily fully exempt for all the big tournaments in America. And I just wanted to keep an eye in case somebody came racing through the pack with a bit of form. Now, Stevie was that guy. Stevie came through very strongly. I know he played some world events and majors, obviously, too. But he came through in a very strong way. And as I say, I didn't have to push him over the line. I didn't do him a favour. He's earned that spot on the team.
How did Stevie react when you broke the news to him, Paul?
That's great, wee man, was his first words. That's great, wee man. He kept saying it over and over and over. I think he was beside himself with excitement. You know, it was an easy call to make. It wasn't a difficult call. I made the tough call first. Luke was the first guy I called. I wanted to speak to Luke and talk through why he wasn't going to be on the team and have a long, long relationship with Luke going back to his first ever Ryder Cup match. I was his partner in 2004. Stretching through the vice captaincies that I've been involved in, where the captains have asked me to kind of keep an eye on Luke, where different vice captains were looking after different players. So I have a very strong personal relationship with Luke, and it was a very tough call for me to make, particularly as Luke was in the team pretty much all summer, and it's only in the last month or so, the last few weeks, that he's actually fallen out of the automatic places.
It must have been a difficult conversation with Luke Donald, because the wider world, those that don't follow the European Tour, will look at a former world number one missing out and wonder why. Do you see why they would think that?
Of course they would, and I'd love to have Luke Donald in the team, but I had three guys, in my view, and in the view of the other vice captains, who were more deserving of the picks. And unfortunately, as low Luke has been playing pretty steady over the summer, he hasn't really reached the heights that we know he can reach. Ultimately, Lee did, maybe not a huge amount, but he did reach some heights when we asked him to put the foot down and produce some performances. And that was the difference. And Francesco Zanardi was another guy we looked very, very closely at. He's a guy who statistically was probably as strong as anybody in terms of his performances. But statistics are not the be-all and end-all. They're a reference, and we use them as a reference. balance, and there's other dynamics we looked to, and we felt that Lee's experience was going to be very important. He's a guy who's played Ryder Cup since 1997, his first game under Seve, playing with Nick Faldo, and right through to now, and he still is a very strong player. He's a big player, hits the ball a long way, very powerful, and I know he's really got his game in shape in terms of where he's at with his coaching and everything, and also where he's at with his fitness. He's employed a new fitness coach and has lost a lot of weight and is really deep in training and very, very excited and motivated about being a Ryder Cup player again.
So looking forward, Paul, are you going to encourage some of the team to play in a couple of events before the Ryder Cup? Because Lee's not played a lot of golf and Polt's having missed out on the FedEx. Are you going to encourage them to play maybe in Wales?
Yeah, we've already had some conversations with some of the players regarding that. So I would think look out for some entries, late entries coming into Wales for sure. And other than that, I want to talk to everybody's schedule in the next 4 weeks to know that everybody is fresh. Obviously, guys like Rory and Henrik are a little bit out of gas at this moment in time. And still have two more events to go in the FedEx. So it's unlikely that they will play Wales, but look for a few late entries for there, all right.
When do you start thinking about pairings, Paul? Has that already started, or are you going to leave it a little bit later, closer to the event itself?
I've a lot of work to do in the next 3 weeks, a lot of preparation to go. I didn't really go down that road before because it wasn't right and appropriate and too many question marks in terms of I need to know the 12 players. Now that I know the 12 players, it's up to me to go away and create kind of a plan, a master plan as to how we're going to win this Ryder Cup and fill the different bits into it and who's going to play what matches and how we're going to go about it and potential pairings as well too. And I've gathered a lot of information from the players already who are on the team. I'll gather more now from the players who are the picks. I'll put it all together and hopefully make some good decisions. And at the same time, having a plan that's flexible where we can make some last-minute changes on the hoof in Gleneagles, as I'm sure we'll have to.
Well, Paul, I know it's been a manic day today and we really appreciate your time on the Race to Dubai podcast. Very best of luck for Gleneagles in 3 weeks' time. We will speak again soon.
It's a pleasure and thanks very much.
Jamie, do you like the balance of the 12 Europeans at Gleneagles?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of pairings here. Most of these players you could put with anybody, really. I think pairing up Victor Dubuisson will be an interesting conundrum for Paul. Maybe he'll stick with Thomas Bjorn or Martin Kaymer. Put Rory McIlroy with anyone, let's be honest. And same with Henrik Stenson. We're looking really, really strong, aren't we, the Europeans? I think Paul's just got to guard against complacency as well, because I think we look so strong. He's right, we've got probably one of the best sides we've ever had.
Tell us about your role, Jamie, and tell us what's it like inside that European team room.
Yeah, I've shadowed the last couple of captains, not so much with Paul, because Paul's been meticulous in his own preparation. He's done quite a lot of the stuff himself up at Gleneagles. He's that type of fellow. He wants to get involved in everything, Paul, and he's done a fantastic job. So, yeah, I've been sort of running the team rooms for the captains and been privileged to be in some of them, quite a lot of the meetings. And, yeah, it's been an incredible experience, really, especially the fact that we've won them both in dramatic terms. So, yeah, it's been a real privilege.
What's your involvement then in the team room?
Just making sure everything works, really, Dan, and if there's any problems amongst the players, you sort them out. Because I know all the players, if they'll come to me if they need anything. And similarly with the caddies as well. So just make sure everything works.
Well, we can hear from Stephen Gallagher, whose uncle Bernard, of course, is a former two-time European captain.
Oh, it's massive for me and my family. You know, it's been a goal of mine all my days to get in. And I was just delighted when I got the call yesterday from Paul.
You obviously like the PGA Centenary course. I mean, is there a better course for you to be making your Ryder Cup debut?
I don't think so, no. It's, of course, I sort of play well. It fits my eye. I like it. It's in great condition. You know, it's just up the road. I've played it a lot. For me, to be honest, in Scotland, up there, it was a perfect fit for me, really.
He doesn't live too far from the course, and he's got a fantastic record, hasn't he, Jamie, at the PGA Centenary venue?
Yeah, he's played 14 events. Some of those are Scottish PGA, but his last three events around there, sixth, and he lost in the playoff last time to Tommy Fleetwood. So, yeah, he knows his course backwards. He's got the game for it, hits the ball a long way off the tee. You do need to strike the ball around. It's a long course. It's going to be playing pretty. You've got to be thinking it's going to be a bit damp, a bit wet. Carries the ball a long way. He's a powerful man, Stevie Gallagher. So, yeah. It's on his way. I spoke to him at the Open, actually, early in the year, and he said to me, "Spencey, what have I got to do to get in the team?" I said, "Stevie, I've no idea. Just keep playing." I said, "The best thing you can do is ring up Paul, ask him. He'll give you the answer."
Stephen Gallagher, one of the wildcard picks. Another one, Ian Poulter. Let's get his reaction to receiving the call from Captain McGinley.
Absolutely thrilled. Obviously, to accept the call last night from Paul was amazing, and I just can't wait to be at Gleneagles. I think, you know, it's going to be a fantastic team. I'm very, very proud to be a pick, and I just can't wait to get there.
you know, it's Ryder Cup means a lot to me, and I guarantee I'll be ready.
Everybody was presuming that Ian Poulter was going to get the call, but I would imagine the man himself would not know until he actually got the phone call from Paul McGinley. You can sense the excitement, can't you, with Ian Poulter?
Yeah, you can, and he's not played you know, that well this summer. He's blighted with quite a few injuries have held him back as well, Poults, but it would have been a brave man to leave him out. You asked me what I'd do in the team. Well, I remember going back to Celtic Manor on the Sunday evening. We had a fire alarm at 1:30 in the night, and I had to wake Ian Poulter up, drag him out of his bed, and take him outside in his pyjamas. So that sort of thing you do. So, yeah, that just made me chuckle. But, yeah, Poulter will raise his game. We know he's going to raise his game, and he loves playing the Americans.
Yeah, let's hope that Lee Westwood does as well, who called in on another rather crackly phone line from the States to share his thoughts.
The Ryder Cup has always been a massive thing in my career. I'm delighted to get the call yesterday afternoon from Paul. It was a long day yesterday. Obviously, when Paul rang and said good news, then, you know, breathed a sigh of relief. You know, played a lot better the last month and a half. And Paul asked me to show some form, give him a reason to pick me. And, you know, I think I did that, especially the Bridgestone in the final round. And, you know, came out of the blocks the following week and led the PGA Championship. So, you know, delighted and honoured to be representing Europe again.
That was Lee Westwood, who with the other two wildcard picks were phoning into the press conference. And Lee Westwood, Jamie, he's played better over the course of the summer, certainly better than Messrs Poulter and Donald, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And I always look at the majors, and Westy, 7th at the Masters and 15th at the PGA. Now, that's not ripping up trees. It's pretty decent. Compared to the others, it's very good. So, you know, looking at the major championships, and as I say, he played very well in the Cadillac. I've seen Westwood in the team room. He just says the odd thing, puts up the odd note. And he's got Billy Foster back on the bag. He missed out last time at Medina as well. So they're a potent pair. He's got the best, probably the best caddy in the world on his bag as well. He's got plenty of experience. Let's not forget that caddies play a big part of the Ryder Cup as well. So, yeah, I'm pleased that West was there.
We don't know the full US team yet. We do know the full European sides. Would you suggest Europe a clear favourite, strong favourites?
Very strong favourites, which is always a bit worrying, isn't it? We're always better. We seem to do very well when we're underdogs, or when we're getting beaten. We have that spirit about us, but, yeah, we're very, very strong favourites. As I sit here today, we've got to be well odds on.
So a definitive answer from Jamie when it comes to Europe being favourites for the Ryder Cup. Let's get an American perspective on Europe's final 12 now from journalist and broadcaster Matt Adams. Matt, your thoughts on Paul McGinley's wildcard picks?
I wasn't terribly surprised, I have to tell you, gentlemen. I mean, that Stephen Gallagher was picked for the team, A, given the fact that he's a Scotsman and all that that would mean back at Glen Eagles with only the second Ryder Cup and Scottish soil. But when he's played the majority of his golf on the European Tour, then arguably his pathway to automatic qualifying but was a more difficult task than those that were playing predominantly on the PGA Tour with more world ranking points at play. So I thought it was a great pick that he was on there for a whole variety of reasons, not the least of which is the weight that his family name carries in the Ryder Cup. When it comes to Lee Westwood, I think Lee Westwood, in fairness, was in some ways you could almost kind of flip a coin between a former world number one in Lee Westwood or a former world number one in Luke Donald. But Lee Westwood has the edge in terms of the experience and in some measure, I suppose, although neither one of them are stunning in their current form, he even has, I would say, the slight edge there. When it came to Ian Poulter, if you're talking current form, you would say, okay, well then where is he compared to the other two that we were just discussing? But Ian Poulter seems to be somewhat of a Ryder Cup savant, and he becomes, in essence, another person, a heart and soul. So all in balance, I can't say that I was terribly surprised by the picks, but I do believe that they are very, very solid in their own right.
Do you think it would have been different if the Ryder Cup would have been held on American soil then? Because obviously Donald's so comfortable playing on the US Tour and in America, and as you've mentioned, Gallagher with huge ties to Scotland and the European Tour. Would it have been the other way round if we were talking about a Ryder Cup in America?
Perhaps that speculation might have merit, but you know, if you're going to put someone on the team from the perspective of merit alone, no one was closer to automatically qualifying of the three that got picked or the four whose names we're discussing right now than that of Steven. So at that point, I would tend to believe, even if the scenario were the location, if you will, of the matches were in the United States, that we would have had the same result.
Paul McGinley has described it as the strongest European team ever. Would you echo those thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting in that regard how he and Lee Westwood also spoke to it. Ian Poulter touched on it as well, that it was the hardest team to make. And they all speculated that this will continue to be the prospect moving forward, that it will be very, very difficult to automatically qualify and, as a result, then get a captain's picks onto these respective Ryder Cup teams. I don't think it was different on the American side, that it's been very, very hard to get onto these teams. I think that is good for both teams. It's good for the competition itself, because I think that holds for all of us the promise that we're going to see some very compelling golf played. And certainly some of the more recent Ryder Cups, namely Medina, spoke to that as well, that it was just a razor's hair difference between winning and losing.
We don't know the final US 12 just yet. What do you make of the nine so far? Obviously, no Tiger Woods or Dustin Johnson. What's your view at the moment on the US team?
Well, I actually like the US team. I like the fact that, you know, if you haven't had a rich vein of form of late in terms of wins or even draws, then I like the idea of bringing in some fresh blood. And the US team has some exciting young golfers. And in the case of Ricky Fowler, he even has Ryder Cup experience. And in the case of Jordan Spieth, he already has some Team USA team experience, that being a President's Cup. But even Patrick Reed strikes me as a fiery guy. I don't know a great deal of him. Perhaps, from that standpoint, you'd look at it from both sides of the pond and say, he reminds me of the days, you know, Jamie, when a U.S. team would come over and a third of the team, maybe half of the team that you would know very well because they were likes of the Jack Nicklauses and so forth. But then you wouldn't really know the other names that were thrown in there, regardless of who they were. And the same used to happen when the European side or the Great Britain-Ireland team before 79 would come over, where you didn't really know the players and you kind of got to know them as the week progressed. And I think that's going to be the case with some of these young players. I'm excited about the team that Team USA is bringing over. I know the discussion has been had, you gents, most recently, where who is the underdog, who is the favorite here, and predominantly everyone's moving to the European side in that regard, as rightfully they should, with the strength of the players and their performance in the last 2 years on that team. But I think once you get down to the competitive flash itself, it's not about what you've done over the last few days or weeks or months or years. It's about what happens right there, man on man. And as we know, in match play, crazy things can happen. So I'm still excited about the team.
We're looking forward to seeing Jordan Spieth coming over here. And Jimmy Walker's come over and played in the Scottish Open earlier this season, Matt. And also your possible picks anyway, Chris Kirk, Hunter Mahana won recently. So you've got some really good choices for Tom Watson to make later tonight.
I had the opportunity to speak with Ted Bishop, who is the president of the PGA of America, earlier today on my own program, Stateside. And he was talking in terms, it was a past tense that he was talking about, the whole process of naming who will be the three. And I said to Ted, is it done? Has Tom Watson already made his decision and we're simply awaiting the appointed hour? And he said, yes. He said, it is finished. He's already made his decision as to who his three players will be that he's going to put on the United States team. I did not, I will tell you respectfully, because I know it's an ex-journalistic question, so did you ask me who they're going to be? But I knew I wouldn't be granted that answer. But I just thought it was interesting to know that what it had to be a very difficult time to sit and ponder who's going to get it and what phone call you're going to make to tell someone that they did not, it's finished. And we're just awaiting the cork to be pulled from the bottle and those names to be revealed. Along those lines, I'm curious what you guys think, but my sense is that Hunter and Keegan are on the team, both because of the merit, maybe because of past performance, because of the enthusiasm, that I have a feeling that those guys are on the team. Did Chris Kirk earn his way onto the team with his victory yesterday at the Deutsche Bank Championship or not? I don't know. That's a big question for me. There's a lot of speculation on this side of the pond that it still will be former U.S. Open champion Webb Simpson that will get the nod because of the fact of the experience that he's had and that he's been there before with USA teams. So I think there's one wild card left, and that's the question mark that remains.
Well, we will find out later today, and we'll find out in 3 weeks' time who will win the Ryder Cup. Matt, thanks for joining us. We will see you at Gleneagles.
Gentlemen, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for your time.
Always a pleasure to hear from Matt Adams, a regular, of course, on the Race to Dubai podcast. Now, let's reflect on last weekend's 71st Open d'Italia presented by Damiani, and it proved to be a cracker. Jamie, Henny Otto hit the front on day two after a spectacular 62 and repelled all comers.
Yeah, he certainly did. When you're 15 under par first two rounds, it really sets you up. It's a golf course you can make lots of birdies on. It's the finish isn't that easy actually out there, but when you're 15 under for two rounds, you've got 62. That's some scoring for Henny Otto. I was a little bit concerned, however, because early in the season, South African Open had a big lead and he blew that. And he's that sort of player, Henny Otto. You're not sure what's coming, but he is a winner. He's a tough competitor. And he played fantastic the weekend. Never easy to be in front. He did it very well.
Huge subplot, of course, because Stephen Gallagher was hoping for a top two finish to make the Ryder Cup team as of right, and he nearly did it, didn't he?
Yeah, it's funny when you're more interested who comes second than who comes first in an event. And Stephen played terrific golf, and unfortunately, one of his best mates, David Howell, pipped him with that fantastic 63. And Howell has been playing some good golf lately, Howler, and he's one of the best. When he gets that putter going, he's almost unstoppable. And he did on Sunday in style, David Howell. And Stevie Gallagher nearly caught him. But what a performance by Stephen there all day long. Under the massive pressure at the weekend. I mean, he's 265 he shot in the last three rounds because he only had it opened up with a 72. So to shoot those 265s, great performance.
Well, it was Henny Otto, of course, who secured the victory. The South African who won his third European Tour event after what's been a difficult year.
I went through a really rough time in my family. And like I said, I was like Peter and... I was in a boat sinking and decided to step out the boat and follow Jesus and ask him to help me. And what he's done for me and my family up to now. My dad's wife passed away, my dad passed away. So, it's a rough time. And the injury came again. And I must say thank you to him for pulling me through to this.
Proud of yourself? The way that you've held things together? There were times when it could have got away from you.
Yes, it did. I mean, golf's not perfect, is it? And especially after the injury, second week back, win. I'll take it any day.
Well, he gains his third European Tour international schedule victory in his 280th European Tour event. His first European Tour victory since the 2011 South African Open Championship, a gap of 2 years and 277 days. And it moves Otto to 37th in the Race to Dubai standings. The tips from last week, well, unfortunately, I had a non-runner, Soren Kjeldsen, who didn't tee it up in Turin. Stephen Gallagher was Rob Lee's selection third. Nice one from Rob. Let's get the full top 10. Jamie.
Henny Otto, 20 under par first from David Howell, two shots back at 18 under par. Stevie Gallagher, third. And then Joost Luyten, so close to getting Ryder Cup side himself, 65 last day for Joost. Tied with Richie Ramsey at fourth place. Sixth place, Bernd Wiesberger. Playing some good golf, Bernd Wiesberger. And then tied seventh, we have Simon Dyson, Ross Fisher, Andreas Harto and Lee Slattery.
How does that impact the Race to Dubai? Let's get the top 10 when it comes to the money list in Europe.
Let's count them down. 10th, Louis Oosthuizen. Stevie Gallagher's moved up to 9th. Great season for Stevie and great pick today. 8th, Victor Dubuisson. 7th, Justin Rose. US Open champion in 6th place, Martin Kaymer. Henrik Stenson. Can he challenge to that top spot? I don't think so this year, Henrik, but you're in 5th. You're doing great. 4th for Jamie Donaldson. 3rd for Thomas Bjorn. Sergio Garcia have been chasing Rory all year at 2nd. And number 1, Rory McIlroy.
And a lot of the same names we're going to mention when it comes to the top 10 in the world. Don't think there's been too much movement at the top. How does the top 10 stand?
Well, there's a few Americans to start with. 10th place, we have Phil Mickelson. And the Masters champion at 9, Bubba Watson. Matt Kuchar in 8. Furyk in 7. Jason Day at 6. And the top 5, we have Justin Rose. Sergio's at 4. Henrik Stenson, 3. Adam Scott, lone Australian in that top 5 at 2nd, and Rory again at the top.
Just a few bit of news to share with you before we look ahead to next week's event. Chris Kirk picked up the biggest victory of his career in winning the Deutsche Bank Championship at TPC Boston, the second event in the FedEx Cup Series. Rory McIlroy was the top European, finishing 5th. The top 70 advanced to the BMW Championship in Denver later this week. Colin Montgomery led from start to finish to successfully defend his Travis Perkins Masters title on the European Senior Tour with a 10-shot victory at Open. Jamie, you were involved in that event as well. Where did you finish?
Way down. Depressing. He wins by 10. He comes over and takes a mickey out of us. Wins by 10. It was a tough course, Woburn. Full marks to Monty.
Well, Monty won his first senior tour title at last year's event with a six-shot victory, but his defence was even more emphatic as he shot a closing 67, and that was despite an early charge from the American Mike Cunning.
Mike started better than I did, and I dropped one at the third, and he had a good putt at the fourth and fifth to get within one, so it was a different ball game. And then I started to make a few birdies and pull away, but a lot closer than that.
Monty winning again. That was the seniors. Elsewhere, Joachim Lagergren claimed his maiden European Challenge Tour title at the Northern Ireland Open Challenge in association with Maui Jim Sunglasses after the Swede produced a grandstand finish, holing an 8-foot clutch putt at the last for a birdie and a 1-stroke victory. And don't forget to go to europeantour.com for all the details and stats of each and every player on the tour. The European Tour is in the Swiss Alps this coming week for the Omega European Masters. Jamie, this is an event that you know well.
Yes, I had a bit of success here in Switzerland. I won it back in 92. Have great memories of the place. It's a great place to go and play golf. It's a bit like St Andrews. It's sort of like a little... You walk around everywhere. You haven't got to get any cars to get to the golf course. It's all self-contained there, and... The golf course is pretty special as well up there in the Alps.
Far too modest to say you've had a little bit of success. Well, just tell us about what happened back in 1992.
Well, I shot 73 on the Saturday to be 10 behind the leader, and I was playing really well that week, so I was extremely annoyed, to say the least. And then I took it out in a couple of bottles of red wine that night. Not advisable most weeks. And I went out and shot 60 the next day and won in a playoff. So my preparation was strange, but it paid off.
Which is still a European Tour record, isn't it? 60?
It is, yeah.
We haven't had a 59 at all.
No, every time someone gets close, I'm sort of secretly happy that they don't break the record.
You obviously enjoy playing it. Do the current crop of players enjoy playing at Cron?
I would think so, yeah. It's a great place to go. They've remodelled the course. Seve redesigned it, and they've made alterations since. They keep changing it, making it better and better and better. I know they've had a lot of rain there over the last few weeks, so it's going to be soft conditions for the players. But it's a great spot to play golf, and it's had some fantastic winners.
Good scoring, no doubt, hopefully, this week. Who features? What sort of field have we got teeing up in Switzerland?
Well, Bjorn and Jimenez, past winners, they sort of mind the players that sort of grab my attention. And Jamie Donaldson's playing there. Robert Carlson's a previous winner. Bernd Wiesberger, I really like Bernd Wiesberger as a player. He's someone to look at. He strikes the ball incredibly well. He's got a great presence about him on the golf course. And Bradley Dredge, he's been come back to the European Tour. He's had a tough few years, Bradley, but he's played really good golf the last few weeks. He's just about kept his card for next season, and he's won round here before as well.
Another player who certainly is a big fan of the course is Richie Ramsey, who, of course, won there in 2012.
Love the place. It's beautiful up there. So we'll drive up to Geneva tonight and then soak up the views tomorrow on the train up the mountain. And then just a few tweaks, not much to do, just stay positive, stay confident. Just go out and try and enjoy my golf as much as possible. I'm swinging the club really well. It's just a matter of trying to pick another one off and chase that third win.
And you clearly know how to cope with the mountain air, the different distances, the nuances of those greens.
Yeah, it's... On a first look, you think, oh, well, there's definitely a square out here, but it's a lot trickier than you think. The difference in temperature, the ball flying, you know, 20 yards different from morning to afternoon, and, you know, the small greens and the runoffs are really, really tricky. But I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully, you know, get in the position again come Sunday afternoon, and I'm more than capable of picking another win off.
Nick Dye once again with the questions. This is the part of the show, Jamie, where we ask for the winner of the next European Tour event. So no pressure whatsoever. But who do you think might be lifting the trophy in Switzerland on Sunday?
Well, Thomas Bjorn's going for the record 3 wins. And I think he might achieve it. He's played some really good stuff this year. I think getting in that Ryder Cup team was number one priority. But I think, he's a class act, and I think he'll win another one.
And I'm going to go for Mikko Ilonen, who was 7th in the PGA Championship, the final major of the year. And he is playing this week, I promise listeners. And of course, he's also got a top 10 on his CV at the European Masters. Well, that's all for now. We'll be back next week to look back at the Omega European Masters, as well as look ahead to the KLM Open in the Netherlands. So until next time, it's goodbye from me, Dan Roebuck, and him over there, Jamie Spence. But we'll leave the final words to European Ryder Cup captain Paul McGinley.
We've got a big task ahead of us, playing against a very, very strong American team, led by a very, very strong individual in Tom Watson. I, for one, are under no illusions how difficult a task ahead is going to be. And it's going to be a very exciting week, a roller coaster ride, as we all know Ryder Cups are. But I think everybody in this room who's a European fan will be very proud of those 12 players representing them in the Ryder Cup this year.